This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
I did the plane thing for the first time, in about a year and change. Figured it out. Over a year. That's what everybody's talking about when you run into them in the airport, by the way. Hi, everybody. Kate Delaney. So I've been talking about broadcasting from the Sunshine State, from Florida, and I've taken you through a few of my adventures there anyway. I'll let you deeper into the swamp, because I was actually back in the swamp in an airboat, and had a conversation with an interesting captain of an airboat, and what that was like was crazy. If any of you have ever been on an airboat, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I think what was key is it was wild to fly and to trust that, okay, I'm going to get out there. And the conversations I had with people were interesting, including somebody who said to me, a guy who said to me, he didn't want to fly again, and the reason he didn't want to fly again was nothing about the airlines. It's just that it was too much for him to be masked up in a tight space for over 2 hours, because our flight was 2.5 hours long. And then by the time you do the airport shuffle and you get in, you go through security, and you sit in a lounge, and then you actually board a plane, you add to that. But he said it was more about actually being in the metal tube that made him feel really kind of claustrophobic, and that he had never felt that in his life. I didn't feel claustrophobic. I felt good. It felt good to be back out there. I think the airlines, I talked about this, there's no beverage service. You get a plastic bag with a little bottle of water in it and whatever the snack is, like some pretzels, and you get wipes with that, and that's it. And people on my flight, anyway, on my flights, because there were two, they masked up. There wasn't any arguments, screaming at flight attendants or anything else, because apparently there has been some problems with that. In fact, so much so that the FAA has proposed $63,000 in fines for travelers who decided to drink up and get a little wild and disrupted flights. I mean, all the way back to the beginning of the year, and the fines were something like up to $63,000 for like three passengers who really blew it open. There was a JetBlue incident where a flight from Haiti to Boston, a man drank enough booze that he had brought on board, then started yelling and grabbing flight attendants, and the crew moved nearby passengers to other seats, called the police when the plane landed, and that guy, $31,000, that would be his fine. And then it's, you know, all part of that zero tolerance thing. Then the Delta passenger who hit the flight attendant after the mass dispute, so that penalty was about $16,000. And then there was somebody else on a SkyWest flight from Yuma, Arizona to Dallas-Fort Worth, and that was $14,000 plus, and he drank a bunch of mini bottles of his own alcohol and bothered other passengers. Flight attendants moved him, but he left his seat at one point, starting toward the front of the plane. There were two off-duty enforcement officers who wrestled him back into his seat, then sat in the row behind him. So they're seeking that amount of money. That's part of what the fines would be. You add all that up, and that's where you get the $63,000. So there was nothing like that on my flight. Everybody was, I thought, was courteous. In fact, somebody helped me with the overhead, etc. I mean, the middle seats were absolutely filled. It was a jammed flight both times. There wasn't one open seat on either one of my flights. And granted, this was going to a desirable area, meaning the beach, the ocean, being in a place where you were out there, swimming or surfing or doing something probably beach-like. But for me, it was good to be out again, and it was good to watch and see how people maneuvered, and in the airport itself, which there were a lot of people, but there's plenty of distancing. I saw masks, and more masks. I didn't see any problems with that either. There were signs everywhere about wearing masks. There were announcements about the masks. There were a lot of those stickers that they have on the floor, baggage claim, and checking in for the 6 feet. But of course, once you get on a plane, forget about the 6 feet, the middle seat's filled. So it is interesting to see where this is all going to go and how people react to the mask. All right, speaking of reacting, it's not about the mask, it's about the president. The president doing his first, I'll call it his first big speech of his administration. It's over 100 years, and 100 years, it feels like 100 years, doesn't it? Because he ran for so long. It's been over 100 days, and Joe Biden will in fact, on Wednesday, be addressing a few different things in his speech, and there's a lot of conversation about that, as there always is with a president when they deliver their first address to Congress. And what will that room look like? Because there were some arguments as to people getting back in time and, you know, all of that. Biden apparently will reference what happened on January 6th, the riot, and, what happened there as far as the history of that. That's what's kind of being released as to the people who know what a speech is going to say. He's been working with speech writers and senior aides for weeks on the remarks. Only 200 people are going to be allowed in the room. The normal crowd would be 1,000. And the idea is to capture the agenda that he was trying to enact over the first 100 days in office. I'm sure the pandemic is high on the list because it's not going to be ignored. And it's going to be a major portion of his speech. I'm sure talking about the vaccinations, the milestone, the 200 million shots in American arms, and also on the easing of mask guidelines, after saying he would ask Americans to wear them for 100 days. And then the second part of his jobs and infrastructure plan that includes new spending on child care, family leave, education paid for by a tax hike on the wealthy. That's going to be a very, very big, I think, moment in the speech. And, he's going to prepare, like I said, other presidents prepare for these kinds of things. What will be different is the amount of people that will be in the chambers, like I already mentioned, the 200. And then also, I think so much of the focus on the pandemic and delivering what he said he was going to deliver, and the emphasis on what the wins were. Again, this is what a president would do, emphasizing what they believe the win is, and then pushing the agenda. And part of the agenda is infrastructure. Now, he could also use the address to announce a new cap on refugees after that back and forth on raising the limit, exposing divisions within his own administration, promising to allow more than 60,000 refugees in, but then backing off that amid the border surge and the outcry. Speaking of the border, we're going to go there next to conversation about what's happening, the drug cartels, and some of the things that you might not know on the flip side.
If there's a sudden disaster and you can't get to the grocery store, or they're all out of food, what would you do? You'll wish you had emergency food to get you through the crisis. And that's why we're here. We're MyPatriotSupply.com, America's leading source of emergency food. Our food lasts for up to 25 years, and millions of families trust us for their disaster survival. Won't you join us? Unlike other food companies, we don't skimp on calories. Our meals give you more than 2,000 calories per day. Why? Because that's what you need to survive any challenging crisis. And right now, you can save $50 on our popular 4-week emergency food kit. Just go to MyPatriotSupply.com and place your order. We ship fast, 2 to 3 days max. and your food arrives discreetly right to your door. So order today and save $50 at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with the high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today. Once again, Kate Delaney, happy to be back in the mini studio from a first trip out to Florida and back to the DFW area. Todd Bentzman joins us. He's a senior national security fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies. He's the author of America's Covert Border War. What's so interesting is that Todd just got back. You know, Biden's going to talk about the border a little bit. And he just returned from the U.S.-Mexican border in Texas, where he discovered a border that the Biden administration has left pretty undefended. So, Todd, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I really appreciate being here. Thank you.
Tell me what you found. What did you see, first of all, when you arrived, and what were you expecting?
Well, most of the reporting about the border crisis has been happening in the southern tip of Texas, so the McAllen, what they call it the Rio Grande Valley sector of Texas. That's where all the families are coming through, and the underage, the minors, the teens, and the children coming through has gotten a lot of the publicity and interest. But what I noticed in the CBP's apprehension data was that there's this big spike in adult immigrants in the Big Bend sector of Texas. So I went to go see what that was all about. Big Bend is a very remote, rugged wilderness area that historically is so harsh that it relatively few illegal immigrants even go through there because you have to backpack for days on end. But we're seeing a 365% increase in single adults coming through there. So what I immediately noticed was that ranchers and border patrol agents and people who live there, everybody I talked to, said they've never seen anything like this before through that sector. The border crisis has definitely arrived in this completely out-of-the-way rural corner of the border, and nobody knows about it. And the way it works is that there is a cartel, a drug cartel called La Linea on the Mexican side that has discovered what they call La Invitación, the invitation. They're exploiting the invitation. The invitation that they refer to, I interviewed a cartel smuggler on the Mexican side, is Joe Biden and his promises and policies about welcoming illegal immigrants in. So they are coming in response. And so La Linea figured out that if they go down and recruit these immigrants, it's basically a sales force, that they can very easily gather up thousands of immigrants willing to pay $11,000 and $12,000 a head to make these 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 day backpacking journeys through the wilderness of Big Bend, of the Big Bend area, in large groups, comparatively large groups. Typically, you know, they've always had illegal immigration through there, usually Mexican nationals looking for a job. And they might be two or three here and there, but now you're having groups of 100 and 150 just pushing through ranches and homes and cutting fences and making their way through to Interstate 10, which is, you know, could be as much as 100 miles inland. They get to Interstate 10 and a cartel associate picks them up in a truck on the side of the road and takes them into the American interior. And that's what's going on quickly.
Oh, my gosh. My first thought is I can remember, Todd, myself traveling with the Border Patrol, but in El Paso, where they're, you know, they were doing the cat and mouse thing and they were cutting holes through fences and coming across the Rio Grande, and how they were doing that, you know, on the backs of coyotes, but much different than what you described as backpacking. And I can only imagine maybe also people who don't make it, they pay all that money. And also, what does this mean for the Border Patrol? What's the Border Patrol doing there? How can, for goodness sake, how can they plug that gap?
The Border Patrol is absolutely swamped in there. First of all, because the Big Bend sector is already regarded as a low traveled area, the CBP, you know, deploys an appropriate, what they think is an appropriate force in there, but it is no longer keeping up with the current circumstance, which is, you know, thousands coming through now, and they haven't adjusted personnel. So these, and because nobody knows about it, nobody's really reporting on it. All the reporters are down in the Rio Grande Valley with the children and all that. So the Border Patrol is, you know, they're just, I was out there and I saw them doing the cat and mouse game several times. I was with them as they were doing that, and I never saw them catch anyone. And so what the Border Patrol tells me, I interviewed probably half a dozen of them out there. You'd find them somewhere and you could drive up to them and talk to them. They'll tell you that probably they think maybe as much as 90% are getting away from them. They might catch 1 in 10. Like, the numbers are just terribly lopsided because there's just not enough of them. There may be anywhere from, you know, 4 to 6 Border Patrol agents for a 60-mile-long stretch of border there. In one of
wow.
the station sectors, it's that kind of thing. And so the cartel on the other side is now pulling up 18-wheeler trucks right onto the riverbank on the Mexican side and just unloading these guys. And they just storm over. And truck after truck, just this endless succession of vehicles that these Border Patrol agents say they've never seen. I mean, I talked to one He's been out there for over 10 years. He says, I've never seen anything like this happening over there, over here. And ranchers talking about, you know, this just, I talked to one who said that in 4 years, they may have found 8 illegal immigrants on the ranch. And just since January, February, they pulled 200 off of her land, Border Patrol. She calls them in as they're drinking and eating and stuff, and they come and get them. But she says that, you know, that's just the ones that I, you know, were able to get Border Patrol on.
Wow. Wow.
So that's kind of what's going on out there. It's pretty crazy historically for a very interesting region with a lot of history and beauty, natural beauty. But there's this whole dark underbelly going on over in the Big Bend section of West Texas.
Yeah, very scary. I'm glad you're reporting on it. It is a beautiful area. I can remember going there with my family, and I talk about it all the time. Marfa, Fort Davis, that whole area. And that's scary to me because it's a great place to go, and Big Bend is a great place to go hiking. Now I'd be scared for some of those areas that you're talking about.
Well, if you went to Marfa, you might have seen the art display that they built, one of the artists built way out on the desert. That's a fake Prada store.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see that? Well, that is, Border Patrol tells me that that has now become a major illegal immigrant pickup spot where they, it's a landmark now.
So wow.
The smugglers are picking them up at the Prada thing there.
Wow. Oh, that gives me chills. Todd, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate you shining a light on this, and we'd love to have you back on again. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Todd Bensman, talking about an area, like I said, you heard me tell him, that it's one of my great memories of seeing a place that I had no idea existed. And he said it, a beautiful area. I mean, the Big Bend sector, one of the biggest, most remote and out of sight areas, now this big crossing area, and to think of that landmark, which it, art is big out there in Marfa, being used as a drop off point, and thinking of the cartels going through there and what's happening, and people coming in from all over Central America, Haiti, Africa, Indonesia, all over South America. Wow. Stay with us. We're headed to the mailbag next.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The CDC says fully vaccinated people no longer need to wear masks outdoors. The agency announced Tuesday that those who have received both Pfizer or Moderna shots or the Johnson & Johnson one-dose vaccine can ditch the mask if they're attending a small outdoor gathering or dining at an outdoor restaurant. The CDC still recommends mask wearing at crowded outdoor events or indoor gatherings with unvaccinated people. and U.S. Navy vessels operating in the Persian Gulf fired warning shots Monday night at a group of Iranian military boats. The Navy says a group of Iranian fast inshore attack craft approached a pair of American patrol boats with unknown intent, coming as close as 68 yards to both ships. The USS Firebolt and the US CGC Baranof issued multiple warnings via radio and other methods before the Firebolt fired warning shots at the Iranian vessels, after which they moved away to a safe distance. This is USA Radio News. COVID cases continue to increase in India, which recorded more than 300,000 new coronavirus cases on Tuesday, the sixth straight day with more than 300,000. The United States and other countries have pledged assistance for the Indian medical system, which has been stretched to the brink of collapse in many cities. France, Germany, the UK, and Saudi Arabia have pledged to send oxygen-generating equipment, and the US has promised to send raw materials for the production of vaccines, as well as doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine from a stockpile. Some states are also looking for ways to help. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy tells MSNBC that his state is looking into ways to help India.
I applaud the steps the Biden administration are taking. We are right now reviewing all the potential steps that we could take, some of which we need the feds to obviously take for us. For instance, remdesivir is a decision the feds would have to make. But I was very happy to see that the vaccines going in that direction. We will be here for India in their hour of need, as they would be for us.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
There's a man named Dr. Joel Wallach who is anything but your typical doctor, both a veterinarian and naturopathic physician. Doc asks, why does the United States spend more money on health care by far and still rank 50th in health and longevity worldwide? He believes that people should empower themselves with a basic understanding of nutrition, take charge of their health, and attain optimal health and longevity through nutrition, not by toxic prescription drugs that lead to side effects and more toxic prescription drugs. Doc Wallach's message is resonating with an increasing number of Americans who are waking up to all the big government, big pharma, and big insurance manipulation of our healthcare system. I'm George Norrie, and I like what Doc Wallach is saying and doing to enlighten people about healthcare. Visit brightsidebend.com and listen to Doc Wallach's Deadly Recipes lecture. It makes a lot of sense, and I urge you to join the Brightside Bend team. Go to brightsidebend.com. That's brightsidebend.com.
Oh, you have mail, mistress.
Let's dig in the mailbag.
Thanks for filling up the mailbag. You all are the best. All over the country, from beyond our affiliates, even our fabulous affiliates in New Orleans and Portland and Michigan and West Virginia and Florida. The list goes on and on. Connecticut, etc. But you can always hit me up 24/7. Kate@KateDelaneyRadio.com. Kate@KateDelaneyRadio.com. This one from Jake, who says, Kate, I know that you've been on the road, and I know you're paying attention to everything that's happening, and I wonder, what do you think about the fact that Americans can go without masks outdoors except for when you're in crowds? Are you seeing, especially since you've been traveling, more people that are maskless when you're outside? Yes, yes, and yes. Thank you. I'll have another. That's a great question to ask me, because I was in a tour. I was in like four or five different areas that were tourists kind of heavy areas and local heavy areas, and on a beach that people had their masks off, but they were outside, and that's exactly what's being said, right? And then in an area where you're walking down this pier and people are eating outside, and the cafes, a lot of them had tables that were full of people who didn't have masks on. And then you did see in some other areas that people were masking up when they were walking inside. Now, a lot of stores, and remember, Florida's been criticized for the fact that Governor DeSantis, you know, let it stay open longer than most of the other governors did, was really resisting that in the beginning of the pandemic, then kind of in the middle, and then toward the end again. But now you've got the Fed saying, like Jake is asking about, that they're saying fully vaccinated people can go without masks outdoors when
when they're jogging, walking, biking, dining with people outside. And this is a milestone for a lot of people. I think people are so weary of masking up, and I think there is a disconnect between so many of us. And it's sad. It's hard, right? Because there's so much isolation. So what was is not. But I found that that created the opposite, specifically when I was speaking and when I was working with a wonderful association that I do a podcast for, the National Petroleum Energy Credit Association, incredible people, and PECA for short. They were so excited in a small group because this was a hybrid conference. They were so excited to have conversation and to be able to have some contact and felt, and everybody talked about it. And a big percentage of this group is male dominated, and they were from all over the country, and they were talking about, you know, flying from Atlanta, coming in from St. Louis, Missouri, coming in from Denver, coming in from other places, and what the travel was like, but also the fact that they were so ready to be together, to have conversation, to be able to sit outside, to be able to do the things that they did before. It was really something to see. It really was. And the relaxation of restriction is what the Biden administration, I think, is going to really push for, the getting vaccinated, urging people to, you know, move forward and do that if they haven't, but also move forward in living more normally, getting together with people, going to the park without needing a mask. Remember, July 4th was kind of the target for when people could get together for backyard picnics and have a sense of normalcy. And now, I guess, with these new mask guidelines, and maybe these remarks, that would encourage people to do that. But the vaccinated and those not vaccinated, there is a chasm there, and we absolutely have talked about it on this show. And I will say that all the people, all the men that I talked to, and then there were some women, but definitely there were a lot of men, they all had been vaccinated. They all were not thrilled about anything that we were in. They, you know, what happened with companies, what they had to do to re-rack, the Zoom meetings, all of that, doing what they could, taking the steps that they had to take, but also, you know, being able to emerge from our caves, I guess, and feeling like, yeah, does the shot do anything? Is this protecting? You know, that's the question. What are the right steps? So that's a great question, Jake, because I got to see it up close and personal, from the airport to being with people myself, family members I hadn't seen in 16 months, to being on an airboat in the marsh and people talking about that there, to being on a boat also in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, to being on a beach, to being inside in a work situation, to taking this show into a work situation. So with 96 million Americans who are fully vaccinated, now those people, I think, feel a little more confident about going outdoors and doing the things that they maybe weren't doing, maybe mixing with more people, right? Yeah. All right, we move from Jake's question to this one. This one is from Tom. Tom says, "Hi, Kate. I've been listening to you probably for about 6 months or so. I enjoy the show. It's a fresh breath of something, I guess, a little bit different, because I like the fact that you talk about more things that are happening. I get my full dose of I'm angry about politics earlier in the day. So my question to you is, what did you make of the Chauvin verdict? And do you think the verdict holds up on appeal?" Okay, so do I think it holds up on appeal? Let's talk about that first. I think it does hold up on appeal because of the video. He was found guilty on 3 charges after George Floyd's death was captured on that video by a 17-year-old. And I think because of that, that holds up. It'll be very tough on appeal to to upend that. I believe that. That sparked the protest. That sparked the reaction. It's just undeniable what you saw on that video, where you had Republicans and Democrats and whatever anybody wanted to call themselves, kind of in agreement for the most part about, wow, that's shocking, you know, nine minutes and 29 seconds, that whole thing. And in fact, there was just a poll done where more than three quarters of Americans say they're satisfied with a guilty verdict in the trial of the former police officer for the murder of Floyd last spring. And this was one that was done by CNN and SSRS. Just 16% were dissatisfied with the outcome. I think the verdict was just. And again, my reasoning, a lot of it goes back to seeing that undeniably unaltered video and watching what was happening there. What I think is the worst part of what happened with George Floyd is that this was preventable. I think watching what happens with the three cops next in August in that trial will be something to watch as maybe precedent setting, because I know police officers. I have had police officers in my family, and I've trust me, I've heard it all. And the backup is so important, and your partner is so important, and the people who arrive on the scene are so important as to what's unfolding. Do they have your back? Why he wasn't pulled off of George Floyd, especially when he was absolutely 100% down, I don't get it. I don't get why they did not react to that. And that's part of what that small crowd was screaming. You know, you're choking him. You're blah, 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 blah. Why that didn't happen, it just it makes no sense to me, because that could have been avoided. So I think there is, like I said, labels are kind of out the window for the most part on that, on the Chauvin verdict, and I think it was a just a verdict. I do. All right, so let's move to another one. This one is from Amber, and Amber says, hi, Kate. After being stuck inside for more than a year, so to speak, I am so ready to go on vacation. My family and I are going to take a road trip where we're driving across the country to one of the national parks. And I'm super, super excited about it. I don't even care what the price of gasoline is. People keep saying to me, oh, the time that you're taking, isn't gasoline going up right now? We're losing our mind. We are so ready to take this vacation. So I know that other people are thinking the same thing. And if I have to top off my tank to start off with, and I have to be careful and space this out, I'll do it. Somebody suggested to me, why not get an electric car? This is the perfect time for it. And my suggestion to them is, do you have the money to spend on the electric car? No, thank you. And I don't want to have to try to find charging stations right now. When do you think more charging stations will be available in more remote places? You know, that's the thing. It's funny that you brought this up, and this is why I highlighted this. The charging stations for cars, to me, is what I think is what lacks in some areas. Especially, you have to measure that correctly, of course. And when you're not used to doing that, it's so important to be able to find a charger, right? To be able to be on the go, and being out in a remote area. And I just looked this statistic up. The U.S. Department of Energy says there are 3,884 public fast charging stations in the country now, with over 14,000 outlets. So follow the outlets. I think they need more charging stations for the areas that I want to go to. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
If you're trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Once again, so many of you asked me about the man cave that I said, we're bringing the man cave back. Calm down. Don't worry. We're still in the man cave. Absolutely. So here we are. What would we be talking about in the man cave / whoa man cave? I just did a lot of man cave stuff. I was talking to a lot of people about the sports, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, actually. I think it is the thing that sometimes binds us. And so I had 3 days of lots of off-the-cuff conversation about what did I think of this and what did I think of what's happening in the draft and what do I think of Major League Baseball and people complaining and wanting to see baseball still speed it up and arguments for speeding it up and arguments against. So let's start with this. Part of my conversation was about one of the biggest rivalries in sports. I know there are tons of college football rivalries. There are rivalries in NASCAR. There are rivalries in just about anything sports that you can think of. But to me, the biggest rivalry, because I witnessed it and was scared to death in
and what I saw, seriously, the Red Sox and the Yankees rivalry. I wrote about it in my book, Invade the Man Cave, in fact. The Red Sox beat the Mets, that other New York team, 2-1. But in responding to the questions I get asked about the rivalry, it's because there's so much competition, I think, between those two cities that when you go and you and you, which Dan is worse, but you go to Fenway, which I think will never tear down until it just falls down on its own, which is where the Boston Red Sox play, and you're there. Let's say you could be from, you know, Texas, Milwaukee, anywhere, root for other teams. You just want to see the history and be a part of that. Ooh, some of the F-bombing, the screaming at other jerseys. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it. So this was a little different when the Red Sox played the Mets. And here we are. It's baseball as usual. And, you know, Major League Baseball had a push. We'd talk about this because, once again, pandemic. How many people are going back to a baseball game? Raise your hand if you've been back to one. I've been back to one. I've been in a stadium, and I've seen what that's like. And, again, you have people kind of on pins and needles holding their breath in a sense. But you do get the feeling of, wow, we're like cheering for this team. So Major League Baseball says 70% of players, on-field staff, and support personnel have been fully or partially vaccinated for the novel coronavirus. Baseball commish Rob Manfred made that announcement Tuesday during an online discussion of the estimates to baseball's franchise valuations. And his figure referred to all individuals as tier one in their protocols. That means players, people I just said, the on-field personnel like managers, coaches, athletic trainers, essential personnel. There's a ton of people connected to baseball who need to be in close proximity. Translators, media. That was big because I'm just a media people who got COVID. One, had to go to the hospital and was scared to death he was going to lose his life. He did not end up on a ventilator. But so media, any media, traveling staff, all of that, 70% figure includes partial vaccinations because, you know, some of the vaccines are two vax. So that's why that. So that's interesting because the whole idea for baseball was the push. They were pushing to get everyone vaccinated so the travel would make sense, especially with teams and then the people they travel with and the players and all that ancillary staff that I mentioned and what that, you know, and what that looks like. One of the things that I saw when I was in St. Petersburg, Florida, was speaking of people getting back and wanting sports and, you know, that kind of thing. In St. Petersburg, Florida, they had a big race, a Grand Prix race, and there were lots of people around. There were lots of people looking for tickets and, you know, the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg is always a big deal. And near where I was staying, I could hear the for a big chunk of the day. It was actually pretty cool. In fact, I went down and had a chance to kind of eyeball things. And this race started in like 1985, something like that. And it's an annual deal. And it's usually connected to spring break, and it's the season opener. The Grand Prix is the season opener. It is 180 miles. It's a 1.8-mile, 14-turn, 5 left, 9 right circuit, which they use the streets of downtown St. Petersburg to, you know, as part of this race. So you definitely, for this IndyCar series, you definitely had people interested in what was happening and the practice sessions and, you know, that the whole thing, the qualifications, the rounds, the groups. And it was pretty cool to see it. And to, you know, afterwards to watch the reaction of the winner, that Colton Herta whipped the field, winning the pole, leading 97 of the 100 laps, beating out the winner of the last two St. Pete races by 2.5 seconds, and he had the hookup. It was fun to see. It was fun, and this was an event where you were spaced out. There were easy ways to be spaced out, but people unmasked as well. So that goes to the, you know, all kinds of, there's all kinds of sporting events, and people want to be reunited, I guess, in some sense with the events they used to go and see and cheer for, and baseball is one of them. Even racing, like I mentioned, that's why I mentioned it, is one of them. The NBA is another one of them, where there's spacing. It depends on the home team and where you're going. But I think wherever you were going, there was buzz about LeBron James. Not for anything he said politically, not for any of his tweets about anything, but more about his rookie card. His rookie card sold for $5.2 million. $5.2 million. Can you believe it? I mean, I guess I can because of the market. So it was a 2003-2004 Upper Deck Exquisite Collection RPA, they call it, rookie patch autograph. And it's sold privately. They have a grading service. It was a graded 9 card with a perfect 10 signature. So most expensive basketball card, knocking off the Luka Doncic that was $4.6 million. And it's so interesting. So 9.5, one of two ever graded that high by Beckett. Wow. What a crazy jump that is. I bet you people that mostly collect that kind of thing don't want to part with it, right? I mean, why? There has to be a reason. Like, why did the collector was Aaron Davis, and I remember he was profiled, and I think people have talked about this, in the New York Times for two of his James cards. So, you know, he said one of the cards he had was LeBron's whale, and he didn't have plans to sell. But I guess when it comes to a crazy flurry of demand and for the amount of money you could haul in and the recognition that the pieces are starting to get, and these cards are being treated like fine art, when the market gets driven up that much, what do? Sell, sell, sell. It's good to be king of the card. I have it. It's in my collection. So you can invest in anything. And sometimes the investment is in the eye of the beholder. And sometimes you get lucky. And you can buy lower and you can sell higher. And that is the name of the game if you're talking about those kinds of things like the rookie cards, right? Boy, it's fun to be back in the man cave again. We're going to talk more, obviously, in the upcoming days about the draft and talk about some other things that are happening in baseball as well. Because, you know, we've got the 29th through the 1st. It's coming up Thursday, the draft. We've got the first round and then rounds 2 and 3 on Friday and rounds 4 and 7 on Saturday. Thanks for listening, everyone. Make it count.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs, so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.